This is Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus.
And I'm Michaela LaFrac. This summer, Governor Phil Scott lifted restrictions on large gatherings and live events, and Vermonters started queuing up again for clubs and music venues and comedy shows.
Venues continue to figure out how to let people enjoy live entertainment safely. Some places require proof of vaccine, others are only doing outdoor performances, and a few are back to pre-pandemic style performances. But today's not about the venues, it's about the people who are performing.
Today we're talking to drag and burlesque performers in Vermont about how they've fared over the past year. They've had to think creatively about how to put on shows safely and how to make money in this new landscape. We'll start with Justin Marsh, a Burlington-based drag queen who goes by Emoji Nightmare. Justin, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. All right, first things first, I have to ask about your name, Emoji Nightmare. Where did it come from?
Yeah, so I was attending First Friday events back in early 2015, and it was at Higher Ground, and in the big room, St. Vincent was playing, and I just sort of had maybe one or too many gin and tonics, and I wandered into their green room, and they said, "What's your name?" And I said, "Oh, I don't have a name yet," and we were talking, and this person who was kind of just not in the band, but with the band, had these leggings on, and it was this amazing pattern. I said, "Oh my gosh, this just looks like an emoji nightmare." And they said, "That is your name." And so that is how I was born, basically.
I love the story of how Emoji Nightmare was born. Like, that story just always makes me laugh. But I'm curious, for people at home, how do you describe your drag style?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I'm a little bit campy. I'm a little comedy. I try to be sexy.
What do you mean you try to be sexy?
You know, it's an attempt. I'm a fatter drag queen on the scene, so I can't do the flips and the stunts that these skinny girls can do. But I know that I still look good and can work it just as well as the others.
And can you tell us a bit more about the scope of the drag scene in Burlington and in Vermont? Like, how many people, how many events are we talking here?
We have some really major events. We do New Queer's Eve on New Year's Eve, and we do a Pride Ball during our Pride festivities in September. And then we're probably doing, you know, before the pandemic, I would say I made either appearances or had shows 1 to 4 times a week across Vermont.
Justin, thank you so much. We are going to continue the conversation, and we're going to invite somebody that performs with you, Katniss Everqueer, who is a burlesque performer with the Green Mountain Cabaret.
Hi, everyone.
Hi. So, Katniss Everqueer, tell us a little bit about your style of burlesque.
So I am the messy burlesquer of the crew. I border on performance art, the filthy food-covered performance artist of Green Mountain Cabaret. I really like focusing my performance, centering on my fatness and my queerness. So I put those out there. Those are central to a lot of my performances. I like having fun. I love audience interaction, which that's been a huge piece of how to adapt to safe audience interaction as we're moving into this like pandemic live performance, when we can't get up and people actually, you know, we really focus on consent, but with consent, you know, we used to touch people and interact with them and all of that. And how are we doing that in a post-pandemic world? But yeah, I'm a filthy food-covered performance artist. Love it.
Katniss, I'm curious how the past year was for you. You just alluded to this a little bit, but or the past year and a half, almost 2 years now. What was it like to be somebody who, you know, works in a public space, thrives on that public energy, and then to not be able to perform in public anymore?
Yeah, it, you know, at first I think there was a lot of heartbreak. There was a lot of feeling of loss of community in those moments, because our community is so much more than just people we perform on stage with. They're our family in so many ways. But especially Justin and I really worked diligently together in the digital world and created a lot of digital content with drag and burlesque. And what was great about that is, one, it was able to keep us creative and keep us performing and creating content, but it also allowed us to expand both our audience and the artists we were able to collaborate and work with. So we were able to work with folks all over the country, sometimes even internationally, and get our work out there and also really expand. You know, Vermont has its own demographics. And so especially Justin and I, both as fat performers, we were able to collaborate with a lot of fat performers across the country. Justin and I did fat, you know, fat-centric shows where we were focusing on celebrating the art of drag and burlesque specifically for larger bodied performers. And so that expanded those possibilities for us. And also in a digital world, there's a bit more than you can do on stage. You know, you can kind of do cuts and costume changes. And especially for somebody like me who makes a mess, I could make the messiest mess I wanted and not worry about ruining the stage for the next performer. So in some ways it added an additional freedom, but it definitely removed that audience interaction. There were ways that was done in a digital space, but it's definitely not the same about kind of seeing that in real time and experiencing that audience connection and reciprocity in real time.
I think when we think about drag and we think about burlesque, we don't really think about bigger people that do these art forms. So where do you find the confidence to be able to get on the stage and do this in a world that it's not really built for that body type?
That's a great question. I think, you know, and I have tons of people come up to me and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe you can do that. And what they're telling me is, wow, if I looked like you, I wouldn't be on stage. I do also have other fat bodied people who say, wow, I can't believe you do that. I couldn't do that. And what I'm seeing is their own internalized fat phobia coming out and them, and I'm hoping that every time they see me on stage, maybe it breaks away at some of that stigma around fat bodies and what fat bodies are capable of. And I'm also going to challenge Emoji a little bit. Emoji said, you know, I can't do those flips because I'm a bigger person. There are plenty of fat folks who do those flips and can do those flips.
I just don't want to break a leg. Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm clumsy.
But I think that when I'm on stage, it is both the most powerful and the most vulnerable I feel. And I think that on stage reduces a lot of my fear, and I go on and I'm just going to be who I am, and almost my like awareness of my body disappears. And I've done some acts that are really very personal about, you know, all the awful things that have been said to me as a fat person. I do a piece called Body Love in which I use signs of all these horrible things that have been said to me and other fat folks, about their bodies, about whether or not they deserve love. And, you know, that's a piece that I've had many people tell me, wow, that really resonated with me, or that helped me see how I talk about fat folks and talk about fat bodies. And maybe I'm going to rethink that moving forward.
Emoji, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this topic too. How do you view your own body image?
It's definitely something, I'll be honest, becoming closer with Katniss has allowed me to accept that more. I think, you know, my drag counterpart, Nikki Champagne, we went into business together in 2017, and she's thin bodied, and I, you know, we would do these matching outfits or these group numbers together, and she would have this lingerie outfit that she would be able to buy off the rack. And I was like, I don't know if I can match you on this. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to find something. But what I've been finding is that like, I can look just as good as anyone else. And the confidence is key. As soon as, you know, confidence is sexy. So if you're on stage and you're like, damn, I look good, mm-hmm. then that just that the audience can tell. And then all the other sort of stuff sort of gets, yeah, shed away. So that's really helped me. And I think just embracing it and just accepting it too has really helped.
Yeah. Can I give a quick shout out? I just want to say one of the things I really appreciate about Green Mountain Cabaret, which is a group that I'm a part of, is their inclusive nature. And when, you know, Emoji brought up the point, like when we think about costuming, sometimes costume pieces aren't available across the whole size range. And so we have a group of leaders who are really thinking more inclusively and thinking, how can we make it so that everybody on stage feels good, feels safe, feels comfortable, feels like they're putting their best selves forward. And so it does force you to think differently than just, okay, we can all order this and it'll be here in a couple of days and we're all going to look exactly the same, when you have different bodies on stage and you want to make sure that everybody can have access to kind of what the plan is and both moves, costumes, all of those pieces.
Now, people that are in the Burlington scene are very familiar with seeing you two on stage together as drag and burlesque. Why is that important that you two, who are two different art forms, come together and as one performance?
I think it's pretty unique, actually. You know, when I visit other places in other cities, like drag and burlesque is not as integrated. And I'm sure there are places more like Vermont, but we, you know, for us, we had shows already that were sort of blending the two, and it felt really natural for us to, we're a small community. So when we're putting a show together, we're like, why would we not? You know, there's a lot of intersectionality where a lot of us are queer. And just like to put it all together, it just feels so much better. It expands our family. And there's what I love too, is, you know, when the drag community collaborates with the burlesque community and doing group numbers, I mean, that's really cool. Yes. And that's something that you don't see a lot of. So it's kind of just become a thing that we've done here. When we produce shows, we try to have a fair balance between drag and burlesque art.
Yeah, Justin and I will sit down and we'll look at our list, or, you know, okay, how many drag kings do we have? How many drag queens? How many burlesque performers? What do we have? We're looking at the demographics, both of type of performance and who we've got coming. And I think that both art forms celebrate bodies. They celebrate identities. They celebrate sexuality. They celebrate performance. And so there's a ton of overlap, as Justin said, that intersectionality. And so it's a natural fit. And I think also in a smaller community, it really makes sense. It, you know, it broadens the audience. It brings people in. So if, you know, if Justin has unique drag folks who aren't necessarily connected to the burlesque community, then they might discover burlesque through one of those shows, and vice versa.
I'm curious to hear more about the performance scene outside of Burlington. Mm-hmm. From both of you, what is it like to go out into other parts of Vermont and perform? Do you do that? And Justin, let's start with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been producing, you know, Nikki Champagne and I have been producing shows, like I said, for about 4 years now. And getting outside of Burlington was always kind of our intention. We don't have LGBTQ specific spaces here in the nightclub scene, anywhere in the state. And so when we go places, we're basically creating an LGBTQ venue for that night. We performed the summer in Bradford in a tiny little cafe/brewery. It was great. I think the key is that all spaces deserve queer spaces, and you can create that if you've got the right community behind you and the venue owners who are accepting and willing to do it as well.
Katniss, I'm curious, as you perform around the state and with burlesque, what's the feedback or the reaction from people in the community?
Sure. So I think one of the things that's actually really fascinating is after, you know, things have opened up post-pandemic, or we're still kind of in the pandemic, but as we've been able to do live performances, we have been performing more expansively throughout the state. And a lot of that is because as venues are reopening, we don't have our regular slots necessarily back in place. So we've traveled more, I think, post-pandemic than we were pre-pandemic. You know, we're down in Rutland, or we're in Bradford, or we're in White River. And so I think, like Justin said, we're making sure that we're aligning with folks who are intent on creating positive, you know, queer spaces, positive spaces for body representation. And, you know, one of the things we did this summer was a whole group of us from Green Mountain, several drag performers from Burlington. We were down for a pride event outside of Rutland, and it was just a phenomenally embracing community. When we went to the Bradford place, it sold out. That show sold out in 5 hours. And they said, we don't have things like this happening in this area. And it was so clear that there was a hunger for connection to performance, connection to queer community. Everyone there, that was one of our more, you know, age diverse audiences we've performed at. There were families there. I mean, it was an 18 plus show, but there were adults with their parents there. It was this great mix of humans. And afterwards, like, they just wanted to take pictures and wanted to be with us and wanted to chat with us about performance. And so felt super, super embraced. We have had a couple moments. We had a recent one where we had a little bit of a rough time where the community was not so embracing, and we're definitely driving past. You know, sometimes when we're going to these rural areas, we drive past some signs that don't make us feel super welcome, don't make us feel like we're going to be embraced there. But our best hope is that the organizers are working really diligently to make sure that it's a space where performers feel safe, especially performers who are coming from marginalized populations. fat performers, queer performers, BIPOC performers. So we want to really assure that those folks are going to feel safe in some of those new places.
Well, speaking of live performances, Emoji, you have a big event coming up tomorrow. Is that right?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm hosting it's a brand new kind of show for me, but the folks at the Vermont Comedy Club approached me this summer. They just reopened this month and said, we've got a couple dates. We'd love for you to do like a little mini fall residency. And so I could basically do whatever I wanted. And I decided to do a live dating experience called Heart Emoji. And I'm basically, we did some casting calls and folks applied and we are doing, yeah, like just what it says. I'm having a dating show.
And I hear that somebody audience. That we know and love is going to be a part of the show.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. someone right here, right now.
Yes. That's me. For people listening, that's me.
This is a surprise to me.
come see Connor fall in love.
Amazing.
So why don't you tell people at home just a quick deets before we have to let you go?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Heart Emoji is tomorrow night, September 25th at the Vermont Comedy Club at 9:30. And if you can't make it tomorrow, we're doing another one on November 13th.
That's Justin Marsh, a.k.a. Emoji Nightmare. Justin, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And then we have Katniss Everqueer. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having both of us. This has been a blast.
This audio was recorded by VPR's Lexi Krupp at a rehearsal of Live in Sepia, which is a burlesque show featuring all Black performers. It had a run in Norwich earlier this month. It was part of JAG Productions' Theater on the Hill series, produced in collaboration with King Arthur Baking Company. I'm Michaela Lefrak.
And I'm Connor Cyrus. Today on the show, we have two performers from Life of Sepia. Here with us today, Sharona Henderson, who is a burlesque performer based in Randolph, Vermont. She performs under the stage name Golden Mystique. Welcome, Sharona.
Hi. I said welcome. Jesus. Hi.
Listen, it's been a day. It's
welcome
Friday.
To my life.
We're also joined by Parker Silver, who also goes by the name Hi-Ho Silver and is a multimedia artist based in Burlington. Welcome.
Hi, everybody.
Now, Parker, I wonder if you can set the scene for us about burlesque. For our listeners who haven't heard of it, haven't seen a burlesque show, what is it? What would you expect?
I would say that burlesque, the definition most people use is it's the art of the tease. And as burlesque has progressed from before, you know, as like the grandfather of, you know, stripper culture to now, we have classic style, which is a glove peel, you know, what you think when you think showgirls in Vegas. We have performance artists, as those who were listening earlier, like Katniss Everqueer. And then there are some who lean more into exotic dance. And also we have nerdless, which includes, you know, I have one where I am Smokey the Bear. So it's a full gambit that really just hinges on the art of the tease and surprise.
Can you clarify the Smokey the Bear one? I need more of a mental picture of that. What would the costume for that one be?
So for me, I have a hat. I have a shovel that I use kind of like a baton. And, you know, I have some overalls and some LED lights to simulate fire. I will say I am more of an evil Smokey the Bear. So it's more of a Halloween number, if you will.
I'm curious, how does one get into burlesque? Let's start with Sharona.
It's very interesting. I feel like I've talked to so many people about their origin stories, and they're all so different. But a common factor is usually, hey, I want to express myself in some way, shape, or form. A lot of burlesque performers are, a lot of the burlesque performers I know are artists on many different platforms, and they stumble upon burlesque in some way. And usually it's when they attend the show and they're like, I want to do that. And, you know, a lot of the performers that I know are classically trained dancers who are like, actually, this is really rigid and I'd rather take my clothes off on stage. And so everyone's origin story kind of evolves in different ways. But the commonality is it's an empowering thing, and you can see that from the moment you attend a show.
Now, when you say take your clothes off, one of you alluded to this earlier. Can we talk about what the difference is between being a burlesque dancer and being a stripper?
Well, the way I would describe it is kind of when you think of like the city and the people who live kind of like close to the edge, where sometimes they're like, no, I'm not from the city. And some are like, yeah, I am from the city. I would say burlesque currently is kind of along those lines when it comes to stripper and sex work culture. And for a lot of people, the main difference depends on the performer themselves, I think, and Sharonam, I agree, where some people are really into the high performance, the theater aspect, and some people are like, I am sexually dancing and taking my clothes off and leaning closer to the current stripper culture. But in the same vein that there is a removal of clothing, there is a focus on body and the power of showing your body and enrapturing the audience, I think is one of the biggest overlaps of stripper culture.
Now, Parker, I'm curious what it's been like for you to become a burlesque performer and perform that type of sensuality and eroticism on stage. Was it something that felt like it came naturally to you, or did you have to sort of grow into that role?
It was something that I was always interested in. When I was a child, when I saw dancers and, you know, go-go dancers, strippers, I was always just like, wow, they're super cool. And also, I want to be able to flip like that. I currently cannot, but I'm working on it. And when I came here, and I took my first burlesque class, it kind of really helped with the reclamation of my own body. As being a dark-skinned Black woman, well, Black femme-presenting person, there is the over-sexualization of my body and the desexualization of my body at the same time, in which it kind of creates this weird fog around myself. And then the moment I'm on stage, I'm like, actually, everyone, you're going to sexualize me as I want, the way I want, and you're going to thank me for it. And so I think the empowerment that came when taking the classes and getting on stage kind of just made it more and more natural, because it was, this is my body and I will use it and show it in a way that I choose.
Sharna, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, and also this concept that we talked about in the first segment about the society's idea of what beauty is for women. Often it's white, it's model thin. What is your relationship to your body?
Unlike a lot of Black people I've met in Vermont, I grew up surrounded by Black people because I grew up in Jamaica, New York. And I've always had the conversation with myself and the other Black women in my family that anyone's ideas on my body are their own. So I was not hyper-sexualized by, in the white gaze, like from like the perspective of being surrounded by whiteness and thin white people. I was around fat Black women all the time. So the beautiful thing about that is they were constantly teaching me and teaching each other that anyone's idea of your body is their own. Whatever they want to put onto you in terms of your identity, that does not belong to you. That belongs to them. So I've always been, you know, we all have, we all struggle. I think as a society, everyone struggles with body image because of how it's just forced down our throats. But I've come a long way in my, especially with the help of burlesque, to just accept and love my body. But I've always been someone who's been like, all bodies are different, and this is the body that I have. And I've always enjoyed the sexualization of it on my own terms, as Parker mentioned.
Parker, I'm curious, what are the conversations that are happening in the burlesque community when it comes to body positivity? I mean, we are hearing from Sharonna, we heard from Katniss Everqueer earlier that it's all about accepting, but are those the actual conversations that are happening in the burlesque community?
Yes, I think like many, as we move forward with social media, it's kind of hard to believe that these conversations are happening, but they are, because we're seeing and we're building communities in which we're developing our voices, we're finding our strength together. And
it is still hard because when you think of mainstream shows, yes, they still want the thin, white, untattooed bodies. But as Katniss was speaking earlier about coming to shows in, you know, Bradford, Vermont, and people are hungering for this type of experience, that is kind of creating this momentum and people are connecting and we're having these conversations to be like, hey, all bodies are burlesque bodies. We're all here to perform and people love to see themselves in all different types of bodies on stage.
Has the pandemic and everybody just being at home and being attached to their phones and social media changed the trajectory of burlesque?
For sure. I think one of the main things is that it allows for a different type of artistry, especially with digital shows. You know, like when we think about how TikTok blew up and how that has reached a lot of new audiences, there are a lot of burlesque dancers who are thriving on that platform and creating, you know, the new audiences to come into burlesque.
Sharana, do you feel the same way?
I do feel the same way. It also, there's been a larger conversation in the burlesque community in terms of always having the option for virtual shows because technically it is more accessible. It gives more people the opportunity to be a part of burlesque. It gives more people the opportunity to not have to travel across the country to see your favorite performer. And it's something like you can watch a show on your phone, right? So it's a lot of things have changed, but for the better, and a lot of people have thrived. And some people really haven't gotten into virtual because there is the sense of like when you're on stage and have that crowd interaction, that's key, right? But the virtual settings have been like they've changed a great deal. They've changed burlesque a great deal over the last year and a half.
At the top of this segment, we heard some music from Life in Sepia, the burlesque show that had a run in Norwich earlier this month. Sharana, can you tell us a little bit about that performance and what the audience response was?
Yeah, that was a performance that I've really, a type of performance that I have not done before in my burlesque career. It was to a gospel song from the movie The Color Purple. And it's a way of me reclaiming my body, my queerness, my faith, and combining all of that with what I am so passionate about, which is burlesque.
And Parker, you were in that performance as well, is that correct?
Yes, I was.
What was your experience in it?
Well, it was one filled, in short, with joy, being surrounded by such talented performers. And not saying this to flatter Sharana because they can hear me. I'm saying this because it's true, but watching her performance was akin to going to church. And I know it was not just because it was a gospel song, but watching everyone move and perform and the audience reception was, we sold out shows. They were, you know, one of the best things about drag and burlesque is that the audiences get to hoot and holler and react, you know, with us. So it was just one of the best experiences in the past. I'll give it the past 5 years of my life.
Let's go to Jinj Olali, who is the owner and of the production of Green Mountain Cabaret. Jinj, welcome to the program.
Hi.
What questions do you have for High Ho Silver and Golden Mystique?
Well, first off, I kind of want to know, when are they going to perform next? Because I love watching them both. And I've had the privilege of being able to be backstage with both of them and see them from their beginnings as well. And I don't know, I love watching everybody do burlesque, but especially those two that have really come a long way.
So, Jinj, you've been listening. We're going to have them answer that question just a little bit. But as somebody who's been a part, who owns Green Mountain Cabaret, what's your reaction to this conversation that we're having right now?
Oh, I love it. I love that the talking about the bodies, talking about sex work, talking about drag. It's all just wonderful performance art. And I hope that more and more people will come and support these performers because it's some of the old style dancing and some of the newer things, and it's very inventive and artistic.
How has the pandemic impacted you, and how has the lifted restrictions and welcoming of live performances had an impact on Green Mountain Cabaret?
Well, we went dark along with a lot of theater productions around the state. I felt that we didn't want to take over the stage doing virtual when a lot of other performers who depend on burlesque and sex work to make their money. So we decided to go dark and really promote those performers that really do need to depend on this as their job. So it's been great getting back into the scene to do live performances again, and I'm hoping to get more and more as we continue on.
Ginge, thank you so much for calling. Now to Hi-Ho Silver. When are you going to be back on stage?
Well, for me, I am an immunocompromised performer, so on a live stage, it depends partially on when I get that booster shot. But I think definitely there is a show I'm hoping to do for Valentine's Day. So with featuring some of my own personal artwork and with Golden Mystique herself. So that's definitely a date to watch out for.
And Golden Mystique, is that the same answer for you?
No, it is not. I struggled the whole time when shows were canceled, and getting back on stage a few weeks ago and surrounded by Black performers, I was like, actually, I just want to perform constantly, everywhere, all the time. So the next time I'm performing is going to be at the Monkey House in Winooski on October 8th. And Katniss Everclear will be there as well. I don't know who else will be there, but that's the next time I'm performing.
Do you feel like the community that you're speaking about is growing here in Vermont? Like, do you feel like you know most of the other performers? Or when you go out into the world, are you meeting new people who are getting into this art form?
I don't meet a lot of new people getting into the art form. I'm not based in Burlington. So when I do go to Burlington, it is strictly like I will go and see Parker or I will go to a show. You know, when I go to Burlington, it's pretty much task oriented. I'm not really ingrained in the community there. And that's where most of the people are who get into it. But I've met lots of people in central Vermont who are interested in it. But, you know, it's unfortunate because there aren't a lot of classes. I myself am not a great teacher. My child will tell you that. So, you know, it's just one of the unfortunate things. I'm hoping with how everything's been virtual that people who are interested in it can start to, they can start to see that there are so many virtual classes as well, not just shows, that there are lots of ways to get into burlesque that are not just ingrained in Vermont itself.
Now, we have been talking about how y'all are Black burlesque performers right here in Vermont, and I think we need to celebrate this right now by just talking about the dynamics between your Blackness and burlesque. Sharana, let's start with you.
Yeah, one thing about burlesque, which I think a lot of people seem to often forget, is that it is political. And I have made many, I've made many statements both on and off stage, as a performer, and in terms of like reclaiming my space and being able to make that sexy, but also being like, you know, kind of waving the middle finger at the crowd at the same time, which is like, because it's, I'm trying to find the right words to say this, but Vermont's burlesque scene is so unbelievably white, and any of the other white performers who are on here will completely agree with me. And that's something that we're everyone's trying to constantly change. But being on that stage and surrounded by a predominantly white audience and making sure that you are giving them exactly what you, as much as you want to give as a Black body, is such a liberating thing. Because it's just, we're used to constantly just being hyper-sexualized, desexualized. We're constantly in our day-to-day life just struggling, most of us, right? And dealing with systemic oppression, police brutality, anti-Black racism. So getting up on the stage and reclaiming that space and having the opportunity to show everyone in the audience and extend out as far and wide throughout the whole state that, you know, I'm going to celebrate my body. I'm going to enjoy what I'm giving you. And you're also going to like it as well.
I'm curious, what does reclaiming your body look like on stage? Because here you are, I just imagine that, you know, it's a very sensual and sexy dance where you're taking off your clothes. So how does that translate to taking power and control and giving what you want to give to the audience when the audience, I think, has a very clear expectation of what you're going to do?
They don't always know.
Very fair.
They don't always know. There are things that, you know, for New Queer's Eve, the production that Emoji Nightmare puts on, the last time I performed there, I had a brown paper bag that had reparations on it, and then I written on it, and I took out whip, and I whipped myself on stage. That's not, you know, no one expected that to happen. It is a way to, and every performer has a different answer for that, because some people like to be more political. Some people like to do more nerdlesque and, you know, and connect in different ways. There are so many different ways in which people can reclaim their bodies as performers. And I think I enjoy the element of surprise. And sometimes I enjoy the element of just being like glam and sultry and someone you wouldn't typically see performing.
Now, burlesque has a very long and rich history amongst Black performers. Parker, can you tell us a little bit about that history as you understand it?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest names we talk about when we talk about the history of burlesque is Josephine Baker, and how she is kind of the mother of, you know, a lot of burlesque, and how she went and she left the United States because she wasn't being treated properly, and she was like, I'll go to France. I'll be the baddest woman in France, and I'm going to leave my mark. And I think one of the reasons we had the Life of Stefia show is because the history and the work and the trailblazing that Black performers have done has been discarded.
I do want to give a quick shout out to Jarvis Green for creating JAG Productions, which is Jarvis is a Black performer, producer. He kind of does it all. And he's really helped put Black entertainers on the map, especially when it comes to Vermont and the performance scene. So I'm curious, Parker, we'll start with you. What was it like to be in the all-Black cast of the burlesque show?
It was liberating. It was safe. And it felt, in a way, like home, because the community, the shared understanding, and the kind of importance of having this first all-Black burlesque show was just a mixture of emotions that just was very powerful. And it was also, you know, one of those things where you're just like, I get to see these amazing performers on and off the stage. I get to do this, and I get to dance with them. This is amazing.
Sharana, I think that people in our community, we know what it's like as Black people. We know what it's like to be in the space and walk into a room and only see Black faces, and just like you're able to take a sigh of relief and just be like, okay, these are safe people. I can either talk about race. I don't have to talk about race. We can navigate the conversation, but we have a mutual understanding. How does that translate to your performance when you were in that all-Black burlesque group?
It was the best feeling in the world to be on that stage and feel just the support that comes from another level that I would never be able to receive from anyone that isn't Black, honestly. It's this level of wanting to see other Black people excel. Like, no one wants me to fail, right? There's no insecurity about, you know, my Blackness or how vulnerable I'm being, or if, you know, I'm going to be received well. When there were, you know, we're an entire, like the entire Black cast, and we've all dealt with this. Like, the main attraction, she's been doing burlesque for over 20 years. And she says very often that it's, even in New York,
it's rare that you'll see two Black performers in a show together. And I think that really touches on how we all felt so close and safe and able to express ourselves. And knowing we all had each other's back, it helped. It's like you just saw how everyone performed. And I've seen almost everyone perform it. Almost all those performers perform at least once. You can just feel the kinship, you know, the way we all accepted our standing ovation, the way we all were, you know, backstage helping each other, talking, the way we all made sure we were all fed and everyone had pasty tape. And, you know, it was a different feeling. It was a feeling of just like true, deep rooted community.
Now, Sharonda, speaking of kinship, you are a parent, right?
I am.
Now, I'm curious. I've been wanting to ask you this because I had a child a couple months ago, and after that, my relationship to my own body frankly, like the parts of your body that, you know, were once seen as sexual become very utilitarian after mm-hmm. you have a baby. And I'm curious how your relationship to your body changed after going through pregnancy and then returning to the stage.
Yeah. After breastfeeding for a year, a breast reduction definitely helped that. And like, I felt more connected. That's not like the requirement, of course, but that was how I felt better being on stage. That was how I took away from myself personally that, you know, a part of my body is not for my child anymore. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's purely cosmetic now. And what I've done with performing and, also still parenting, because I have an 11-year-old son who, you know, it's just been him and I for so long. I'm naked around him all the time. He's naked all the time as well. Like we just have, or used to be at least, and we just have this, you know, his idea of what a body is feels extremely liberating because of how I've kind of decided I'm going to be on stage. I'm going to show my body to other people, but also it is just a body. I think there's like this fear around bodies constantly. And as parents, it's like we have to almost, we have to turn this switch on to become more guarded about, our bodies and our children's bodies. And I've kind of, not to say I stripped that away. We talk about consent. We talk about all these other things. And my son knows that I'm a burlesque performer. It's not something I hide from him. And he understands that I am stripping, and he, like, in his mind, he's like, yeah, those, you know, you used to breastfeed me and I'm used to seeing you naked all the time. And this body was just used for like carrying a child around for years and years. And now it's not. Now it's what I want to do with it.
Parker, how does your family feel about you performing on stage? What's that relationship like?
Well, it was actually maybe one of the funniest moments I had with my grandmother when I told her, because I was like, Grandma, I'm going to be a burlesque dancer. And she was like, oh, great. And I was like, a burlesque dancer. And she was like, yeah, I know. I was like, oh, okay. And she was like, yeah. My grandmother has always instilled one rule in me, which is like, live for yourself and live well. And so in the ways that I choose to do so, it's the way she respects and supports. And I think she finds it super cool.
I'm curious, you know, as we were winding down on time a little bit, but I just want to end on like a fun note. Sharonda, we'll start with you. What's one of your best memories being on stage?
Oh, gosh, that's hard.
Is there an experience that you have had that you like look back on and you're like, this was a pivotal moment in me being a burlesque dancer?
Yes. I performed in D.C. for a show called Chocolate Lounge, and that was actually my first all-Black burlesque experience. And at that time, when I was performing on stage, having that feeling, but also still being super new, you know, in many ways, I feel like I really wasn't ready to be on such a large stage that soon in my burlesque career, but I received a mentor out of it. I received like this idea that, oh, we can recreate this anywhere. There are Black performers everywhere.
who are traveling across the country to be in shows and sometimes internationally to be in shows. And going to Chocolate Lounge in D.C. was probably an onstage where I got stuck in my corset, and everyone in the audience is predominantly Black too. And everyone was like, "You got it, girl. You got it. You got this, mama." And I was like, "Okay, I got it." And it was probably like the best, you know, I look back on it now and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe I got stuck in my corset. Wardrobe malfunctions are the worst." And there was just that moment of like, this is great.
I hate to cut you off, but we are just about out of time. Silver and Sharana Henderson are burlesque performers in Vermont. Thank you both so much for being on Vermont Edition.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.